This is Audible.
William Morrow and Harper Audio present Shades of Wicked, a Night Rebel novel by Janine Frost, performed by Tavia Gilbert. Chapter 1. This had better be the right whorehouse. It didn't look like the seedier brothels I'd recently been to. This three-story structure could pass as the meeting place for an elite social club. Despite its unexpected prettiness, if I had to wade through another flesh fest, only to turn up empty-handed again, I wouldn't be responsible for what I did to my quarry when I finally found him. To vent my aggravation over weeks of fruitless searching, I kicked the door open. Politeness had been wasted at the last several establishments anyway. No smart proprietor willingly gave up a well-paying client, and I'll say one thing for the bordello-loving vampire I was after. He obviously paid well. To my surprise, I didn't see anyone in the elegant foyer. Brothels usually had several prostitutes lingering around the entryway to welcome new customers. I was further surprised when I didn't hear sounds of carnal activity coming from the upper floors of the house. I pulled out my mobile and checked the GPS pin. Yes, this was the right place. What's more, it certainly smelled like sex, once you got past the choking scents of various perfumes and colognes. But where was everyone? Faint vibrations in the floor made me stride toward the hallway. Ah, so the party must be downstairs. I followed the strongest sense of perfume until I found a staircase that descended two floors. It ended at a locked door that I also kicked in. No point in being dainty now. Noise blasted out. The basement must have been soundproofed for me to miss it before. Now I wished I couldn't hear what was going on. A boisterous chorus assaulted my ears, repeating over and over. Thunder and Blazes, the favorite opening song of the former Barnum and Bailey Circus. And I had walked into a circus, I saw now, although one without any real animals. About a dozen naked women and men frolicked on the ground, doing woefully inadequate impressions of the creatures their full body paints represented. No work ethic, I thought, when three faux lions appeared more interested in petting each other than in more realistic fights for dominance. And don't get me started on how they ignored the two faux gazelles that walked by them. The dozen or so prostitutes dressed in clown suits showed more dedication for their roles. They emerged from a fake car in the far corner of the room, some falling forward in rolling somersaults once they exited, some tripping each other with comedic exaggeration, and some blowing up balloons into explicit body parts that they then graphically connected. An eruption of fireworks yanked my attention to the other side of the room. They were going off around what looked like a throne, haloing its occupant in a blaze of sparks, fire, and smoke. The mini-pyrotechnic display was so bright, I couldn't make out the enthroned person's face, but when he called out, "Act 8 will now begin," I heard a distinct English accent. Then the smoke cleared enough to show a tall man wearing a blue circus ringleader jacket. The smoke still concealed him from the waist down, but I didn't need to see more to know I'd finally found my target. The vampire who'd blazed a trail through a dozen whorehouses in only 2 weeks had a face as beautiful as an angel's, not to mention that his fire and umber hair was as distinctive as his looks. When he got off the throne, revealing he wore nothing beneath the ringleader jacket, I realized those weren't Ian's only notable attributes. For a moment, I stared. What vampire in his right mind would pierce himself with silver there? I was the only one shocked by the silver piercing through the tip of Ian's cock. Everyone else stopped what they were doing and rushed toward him. Even the glitter-covered acrobats leapt from their swinging perches near the ceiling, gracefully landing near the pile of limbs that now formed around the red-headed vampire. It wasn't enough that I had to be burdened with a vampire so mentally deficient that he'd willingly given himself a case of perpetual cockburn, He also had to be depraved enough to indulge in carnival-themed orgies. I wasn't about to find out what the rest of Act 8 entailed. I made my way to the growing flesh pile and began flinging people aside, taking care not to throw them too hard. Their heartbeats meant they were human, so they couldn't heal the way my kind could. "What's this?" Ian asked in an annoyed manner when I reached the bottom of the bodies. Then he let out an appreciative noise when I yanked him up with none of the care I'd shown the other people. "Why, hello, my strong blonde sweeting." Now he didn't sound annoyed at all. "Are you the surprise I was promised?" Why not let him believe that? "Sure," I said. "Surprise." And I grabbed him by the cock. I had one more thing to verify before I went any further. Ian chuckled.
"That's the spirit, Poppet."
I dropped to my knees. I wasn't about to do what he thought. Still, this act allowed me to zero in on my goal with the least amount of resistance from him. Once I got a good look at the smoke-colored brands near the base of Ian's groin, I released him. Only one demon branded people with these particular markings. And it was the same demon I'd been after for thousands of years. "Ian," I said as I straightened, "say goodbye. We're leaving." He laughed outright.
"I don't think so. You might be lovely, but two's lonely, while a dozen is a party."
I gave a disparaging look around. No great loss. The clowns were fine, but none of your faux animals fought each other, or even attempted to jump through the fire rings. At that, he gave the animal-painted prostitutes an accusing look.
"You didn't, did you?"
Then his eyes suddenly narrowed as he looked back at me.
"Wait a moment. I know you."
We'd only officially met once before, so I hadn't thought he'd remember me. Someone with his tendencies had to have crossed paths with vast numbers of blonde women. "Veritas, Law Guardian for the Vampire Council," I confirmed. Then my hands landed on his shoulders. "And as I said, you are coming with me." His eyes changed from their natural vivid turquoise into glowing vampiric emerald.
"Leave it to a Law Guardian to try and ruin a perfectly good orgy. Sorry, love, I'm not going anywhere. Now take your hands from me before I remove them."
He couldn't mean that. Merely striking a Law Guardian was enough to garner a death sentence if the council was in a testy mood. Only the Vampire Council itself was above us, in undead society. That's why I ignored his threat and tightened my grip.
There's no need for empty threats.
The next thing I knew, I was thrown several meters away. I blinked, more startled by his quickness than by his reckless disregard for the punishment his actions merited.
"No need," he repeated, contempt edging his tone now. "I remember the last time I saw you. I'd say your complicity in the murder of my friend's daughter more than qualifies as a need."
"She isn't dead." The words rang in my mind, a comfort I drew on whenever I thought back on that awful day. But if Ian didn't know that the child's supposed execution had been nothing more than a clever ruse. "That was the council's decision, not mine," I said, my voice roughening from the memory. "I'd nearly lost my position as Law Guardian, arguing against the girl's execution, but fear and bigotry had made the council unmovable. At least they hadn't succeeded in taking her life as they'd intended to." Ian snorted.
"Sleep better telling yourself that, do you? You make my sins look forgivable, and that takes some doing."
"Enough. How dare he judge me? Now come." His brows rose. As if he couldn't believe I'd spoken to him the same way some people called their dogs. Well, if he insisted on acting like a beast, I'd treat him like one.
"All of you leave,"
Ian said to the prostitutes, who'd been watching us with more boredom than interest. They'd probably thought our exchange was more role-playing.
"My compliments for the day's entertainment, but now it's over. Go,"
he stressed, when some of them hung back instead of joining the ones that began to file out the door. I bit back a disbelieving laugh. Are you getting them out of the way because you're intending to fight me?
Ian flashed a smile that increased the intensity of his unusual beauty.
You must not have done your research if you thought I'd come willingly.
The silver from his piercing must have gotten into his bloodstream and damaged his brain. That was the only explanation. I'm more than 4,000 years older than you.
Really? He said with mock surprise. Here I was thinking you didn't look a day over 20, little guardian.
I'd been older than that when I was changed into a vampire, but his guess was a common mistake. People put far too much emphasis on appearances. Is little guardian supposed to be insulting? If so, do better.
Not being insulting, he replied in an easygoing tone. But if you're half my weight, I'd be surprised.
Yes, I currently looked more delicate than formidable. Even if that were true, it wouldn't help him. With age came strength, and I had thousands of years on him.
Stand down, Ian, and I won't punish you for attacking me. Why don't you try begging me to stand down, he suggested. Make your plea interesting enough, and I might consider it.
I was done negotiating. I plowed into Ian hard enough to shatter the bones in his upper body. To my surprise, he did nothing to block the blow. Instead, he flung me upward with a strength he should never have had. I hit the ceiling with such force I went all the way through. For a stunned moment, I stared at him through the hole my body made in the floor.
Stop now, and perhaps you're the one who won't get punished, he said in a pleasant tone.
I suppressed the urge to immediately charge him again. Never underestimate an opponent twice, if you're lucky enough to survive the first time. My vampire sire Tenok had taught me that. Following Tenok's advice had saved my life many times, so I pushed back my urge to retaliate. Ian was wrong. I had done my research on him. It hadn't revealed anything unusual except for a voracious sexual appetite, an open disdain for rules, and a penchant for collecting the rare and expensive. My previous assault should have left him on the ground, not whistling along to that awful circus tune, while looking more bored than concerned. Maybe his unusual strength came from the demon brands? They did more than act as a leash between Ian and the demon who'd seared them onto him. Over time, those brands would also endow Ian with some of that demon's strength and power. Ian had only been branded for a few weeks, though. Not nearly long enough for him to manifest parts of the demon's strength or abilities. I'd find out his secret later. Right now, I needed to take him down. And thankfully, I had some surprises for him, too. I gave Ian a level look. My turn. His smile grew into a grin.
Come and get me, little guardian.
Chapter 2. I didn't jump down through the hole above him, which was what he would have expected. Instead, I made a new hole in the floor on the other side of the room. Ian leapt back to avoid my instant grab, then kicked me during the split seconds my back was turned. I sprawled forward, but even as he pounced, I spun away, leaving him to hit the floor instead of me. Then I jumped onto his back and clamped my legs around him to hold on. He began to buck at once. I tightened my grip until his ribs broke. He didn't slow. I began to whack the back of his head, using strength I normally kept dormant. His head rocked from the blows, though he still bucked hard enough to throw us both around the room. Those demon brands might not be the source of his bewildering strength, but they must be causing him to heal even faster than a vampire's normal swift regeneration. Soon, I was gripping him just to keep from being thrown off. Then he began to fly, smashing me against the walls, the ceiling, and the floor, all while bucking like a crazed, rabid bronco. My bones began to break, and my head rang after being repeatedly bashed against various hard surfaces. If he were anyone else, I would kill him, but I needed Ian alive and cooperative. Maybe his brains hitting the floor would help with that last part. I whacked his skull even harder to force him to the ground and hold him there.
It took a lot of effort, which was why I kept punching his head while shoving his body against the carpet. I couldn't allow him to get enough leverage to start flying again. If he did, I might have to reveal powers I'd rather he not know about, and... Wait, what was that sound? I stopped hitting Ian to listen more closely. It almost sounded like... No, he couldn't be. Are you laughing at me? He was, and now his chuckles sounded louder since they were no longer competing with the noise from our fight. I also realized that the long, hard object I'd felt near my foot was not a concealed weapon. He wasn't just amused by my attempts to beat his skull open. He was aroused by them. You're bouncing up and down on my back, plus all this rough chafing, is really doing the trick, Ian said, still chuckling. Soon I'll have to pay you, along with the rest of the whores. In fact, if you take requests, a bit more effort on your downstroke, love. I threw a punch that should have sent my fist all the way through his head. His neck bent at the last second while the back of his body surged up. Too late, I realized the trap. My fist ended up flying past his head, while the rest of me was catapulted off him. Before I could regroup, he leapt on top of me. In the next instant, he was holding me down, and I felt the distinct burn of silver stabbing me between the ribs. Damn him! He'd managed to goad me into recklessly acting without thinking again. If my legs hadn't been pinned by his, I might have kicked myself for being so stupid.
Don't move, Ian said in a conversational tone. I don't want to kill you, but I will if you force me.
Where did you get that knife? I hadn't been so distracted before that I'd forgotten to frisk him.
From my jacket.
Liar. I felt you for weapons when I was on top of you.
Was that what you were doing?
His lips twitched.
Thought you were feeling around for something more interesting.
At my contemptuous look, he shrugged and said,
You didn't feel the knife before, because it was only a small silver ball a few moments ago.
My eyes widened. You're admitting to a Law Guardian that you used magic to transform a silver ball into a knife? Did I forget that using magic is a death sentence for vampires? Ian used his free hand to mime clutching a strand of pearls. And so is striking a Law Guardian. Dear me, I've condemned myself twice. Please have mercy. Now you're begging? I let out a soft snort. Don't bother. I'm still going to punish you for what you've done. He laughed.
I have a knife in your heart, and you're still threatening me? I don't know whether to keep laughing at you for your delusion or applaud you for your optimism.
If you'd listen instead, you could learn how to prevent Dagon from taking possession of your soul in 2 years. Nothing in his expression changed, though suddenly I felt as if I was staring at a different person, a hard, dangerous one that I'd vastly underestimated. Then Ian flashed another carefree smile at me and shoved that silver knife deeper. I gasped when it pierced my heart. Ian tutted as if I was a child who'd merely stubbed my toe.
I warned you not to test me. Now tell me what you know about my deal with Dagon.
Silver twisting through the heart was one of the few ways to kill a vampire. It felt as if hot lava was being poured into me. Ian hadn't twisted the blade, but the majority of my physical strength left me. Despite that, I kept my reply steady. I know I'm your only chance of escaping the deal you made with Dagon. If he's dead, he can't collect your soul. Ian let out a scoff.
If Dagon could be killed, I'd have done it myself decades ago.
I can kill him, I replied, and though it might be a long shot, it was still the truth. He rolled his eyes.
Hate to be rude. Actually, that's not true. I love being rude. But I'm far less powerful than Dagon, and I bested you inside of 5 minutes.
You didn't best me. I stopped beating on you when I realized you liked it.
Most enjoyable part of our time together, he agreed. But now I'm bored, so let me simplify things. I'm going to bash your brains in. Try to stop me, and I'll twist this knife. Cooperate, and by the time your head heals,
I'll be gone, and you can go back to scaring young vampires into obeying the ridiculous restrictions you call laws. Bashing my brains in would indeed work to incapacitate me. It was the same thing I'd been intending to do with him. His fist clenched. Before it could connect, I released an ability only one other person in the world knew I had. Power flashed out, filling the basement in a blink. Ian's expression showed the beginnings of disbelief. Before it, his fist and everything else suddenly froze. Even the countless dust particles in the air now hung in suspended animation, instead of floating in lazy, aimless circles. I was the only one unaffected as time itself paused within the confines of the basement. That was the upside. The downside was the power that kept boomeranging back into me, hitting my body with invisible, painful waves before arcing out to fill the room again. Between that and the silver in my heart, my nerve endings felt like they were being hit with a blowtorch. I couldn't maintain this for long, so I had to make it count. With Ian frozen, I used his hand to pull the knife free from my heart. Then I uncurled his fingers from its hilt and tucked the blade into my back pocket. Finally, I shoved him off me. "That's better," I muttered, once I felt my heart heal. Then I flipped Ian over and got to my feet. When I unfroze him from this moment, I wanted my face to be the first thing he saw. It was tricky unfreezing a person from time without dropping my hold over the entire room. That's why I started slow and only released Ian's head. His eyes widened when he realized he was now in a completely different position than he'd been before, then narrowed when he tried to move the rest of his body and couldn't. When he glanced around and saw the whole basement trapped in a state of suspended animation, they widened again.
"Bugger me blind," he said softly. "Aren't you full of surprises?"
He had no idea. "As I said, I'm your only hope of keeping your soul. Dagon might be able to freeze time, but I have that ability too. That means his power won't work on me, and I can also use my power to free anyone he's caught in his time web." I left out the part where Dagon's abilities were far more advanced than mine. I could freeze time in small spaces, but I couldn't hold it for very long. Dagon could freeze time for days, and I'd heard that he had once done it to an entire town. Ian didn't have to know that. All he had to know was that he needed me. I could imagine the wheels in his mind turning as he processed that. Once again, he didn't let his real emotions show. They were hidden behind his half-smile. The most real emotion I'd gotten out of him was his eyes widening. And his erection, I supposed. "If I release the rest of you, will you listen? Or attempt to fight me again?" I continued.
"Listen," he said,
with a new impish smile, as if he found the prospect amusing. "As I was saying, we have something in common, Ian. What is your last name?" I hadn't been able to discover it, and I normally had extensive dossiers on the people I hunted.
"No need for formalities. They're only for people impressed by the superficial, and that's neither of us."
He was right, which surprised me. I hadn't expected us to have anything in common except a hatred for Dagon. "Then, as I was saying, you want Dagon dead because that's the only way out of your deal with him. I want Dagon dead for reasons that don't concern you. I propose a temporary alliance so both of us can achieve our goal. But let me be clear. You would have to follow my lead and my rules. Do you agree?" His impish smile never slipped.
"Before I answer, tell me, how did you get this amazing ability? I searched for decades looking for someone of our kind with a hint of it, yet found nothing."
"You don't want to know how I can do this," I thought grimly. "And if you ever find out, I'll have to kill you." "That's not important. What is important is that I can use it to counter Dagon's time freezing on both of us, and that means we can kill him. Do we have an agreement or not?"
"Of course,"
Ian replied, as if there was never any doubt. His tone was sincere, and his bright turquoise gaze never wavered. But all my instincts told me he was lying, even if I didn't have those. Everything I'd learned about Ian said he'd never give another person this much control over him. He must be intending to double-cross me the first chance he got. Well, I had plans I wasn't telling him about, too. Good, I said, and released the power, which felt like it had been frying my every nerve ending. At once, heat blew from the vents again, dust particles swirled, and that oppressive pain left me. Ian stood up and stretched as if relieving a kink. The motion almost concealed him taking in a deep breath, but I noticed because I'd been expecting him to do that. I hid my smile. No, you don't smell sulfur or anything else that would indicate another demon's presence. I really am the one who stopped time the same way that Dagon can. When he turns back to me, his cocky half-smile had returned.
Now that we have an accord, where do you want to begin?
By leaving, I said promptly. Ian swept out both arms, drawing the jackets back to fully display his naked body.
Fine by me, but most people prefer that I wear trousers out in public.
I found my gaze drawn downward, then quickly diverted it back to his face. He was smirking, which was the same as saying, huh, made you look. It was nothing to look at a naked man. To do so and then glance away guiltily? What was the matter with me? Maybe it was my circumstances. The brands Ian carried were my ticket to trapping Dagon, a feat that had eluded me for millennia. Now that it was within my grasp, I was feeling emotions I hadn't allowed myself to feel for a long time. That must be it. In any event, I needed to get them back under control. That's why I crossed my arms and gave Ian a deliberate look from the top of his head down to his toes. Then I met his eyes so that he could see he had no effect on me this time. By all means, get dressed, but only after you take a shower. I don't need to tell you what you smell like.
Over 2 dozen whores,
he supplied. Exactly, so use plenty of soap. He winked.
Looking for an excuse to watch? Just ask, and I might let you.
I was about to tell him I'd rather watch paint dry. Then I caught myself. Clever. I'd been about to insist that Ian shower as far away from me as possible, giving him an excellent opportunity to escape, or to conjure up more magic against me. In fact, I would like to watch, I said, arching my brow, unless you're going to claim that you're suddenly shy. His gaze narrowed. Icy fingers skittered up my spine. In all my years, I'd never felt that unless I was in the presence of someone truly dangerous. Everything on paper said that Ian shouldn't be, yet right then I knew I could never drop my guard around him. If I did, I might not live long enough to regret it. Then Ian smiled. It was so flirtatious and relaxed, I almost believed I'd imagined his hidden dangerousness. Almost.
Shyness is a virtue, and you'll be glad to know I have none of those.
With that, he swept me a bow that managed to look elegant, despite his being clothed only in a circus ringleader jacket. We might both be pretending that this was a real agreement, instead of a race to see who could use the other person first, but I knew better. For now, though, I'd keep up the pretense. And since I was currently pretending that I wanted to watch Ian shower. After you, I said, and followed him up the stairs. Chapter 3 Ian went to one of the second-level bedrooms as if he were very familiar with it. He probably was. Judging from what I'd seen, he'd been at this brothel for at least 2 days. That mock carnival in the basement certainly hadn't been set up in a mere afternoon. He stripped off his jacket as soon as he crossed the threshold. I made sure to keep a close watch on his hands as I followed him into the bathroom. I couldn't allow him to magically fabricate another weapon. There were plenty of things in this room that a highly skilled practitioner could use. Ian's dossier revealed that he had spent time in the company of witches and mages, but it posited that he'd done so for excitement and socializing. Wrong and wrong. Most practitioners would have needed to recite an incantation in order to get the power to transmute one type of object into another. Another way would be to draw several specific magical symbols to create the necessary power. Ian had changed a silver pebble into a knife without a single word or scribble, and he'd done it while I was beating his skull half in. If that wasn't impressive enough, tactile magic was one of the highest forms of the craft. That's why I couldn't take my eyes off his hand. He'd need to use at least one of them to conjure up more of that kind of magic. Right now, he wasn't doing anything threatening. He stepped beneath the shower spray and closed his eyes as that first blast of water hit him. Then he washed his hair, his movements brisk and efficient. When he picked up the body wash, however, he slowed down, working the liquid into a rich lather before running his hands over his body. Did he think I'd never seen a man make a show out of washing himself before? I had, and even the most seductive of them had always been a little too obvious, a little too sleazy. Women were much better at this form of manipulation. But if he wanted to give me something to look at, let him. After a few minutes, I had to give Ian credit. He was good. He didn't attempt to meet my eyes to gauge the effect of his actions. He also didn't go right for his groin, as most men did. Instead, he acted as if I wasn't even there, while he started with his arms, washing each with smooth, sweeping strokes that emphasized the muscled elegance of his limbs. Then he moved on to his chest, soaping it with a languid thoroughness that highlighted every ripple, hollow, and chiseled inch. He gave the same unhurried attention to his lower body, his hands running down the tautness of his abdomen before sweeping over the hard globes of his ass. Those hands lingered over the thicker muscles in his thighs before moving down to his well-defined calves. Even his feet weren't neglected. Somehow, the never-ending sweep of his hands started to feel hypnotic. If I were a few thousand years younger, I might even start to imagine how each muscle, hollow, and sinew would feel if I were the one touching him, or notice how his muscles appeared even more defined when the water washed away another swath of suds, or how his skin glistens beneath the bright lights in the shower stall, or fixate on how the thick appendage between his legs was growing, as if also longing to feel the touch of those slow, skilled hands. When I realized I was staring, I gave myself a hard mental shake. Again, I'd underestimated him. Ian was obviously as skilled at using his body as he was at using magic. That, or I wasn't as immune to his decadent beauty as I'd assumed. Whether it was my newfound compromised emotional state, or my extended bout of abstinence, I didn't know. Either way, I had to keep my focus on both his hands, not just the one currently slicking suds over the impressive appendage between his legs.
I say, you're looking in all the wrong places now.
His voice held the silkiness of honey along with the lure of wine, but deadly potions could also taste sweet. My careful watch on his other hand revealed his true intentions. He wasn't trying to seduce me. Like a magician, he was drawing my gaze one way, while the real trick was about to take place somewhere else. I gave a pointed look at his left hand, which was creeping behind his back. Keep both your hands where I can see them. His smile changed into a scowl.
You're no fun at all.
He wasn't even trying to deny that he'd been about to fling a spell at me. I'd take that roundabout honesty as progress. Law guardians aren't supposed to be fun, I noted dryly. We are supposed to be good at our jobs. And despite a few slip-ups already with you, I am. Even if I couldn't stop time, there's still no spell you could fling at me that I haven't defeated 1,000 times before. He smiled again. For the first time, it seemed genuine.
I take that as a challenge. Let's make it interesting, shall we? If I use a spell on you that you're unable to defeat, you'll drop your requirement that I follow your lead on our quest to kill Dagon. Instead, you'll follow mine. He hadn't been following my lead as it was, but damned if I'd let him off the hook.
Plus, his arrogance could be useful. Good to know I wasn't the only one letting emotion cloud my judgment. How long are you giving yourself to attempt this supposedly unstoppable spell?
2 weeks.
Perfect. If all went well, I would be done with him by the time he tried it. Fine. If you agree to stop trying to escape or trick me until this grand attempt, and when you fail to hit me with a spell that I can't defeat, you'll follow my lead, plus give me 3 unquestioning acts of obedience.
Done,
he said at once. He seemed so confident. He even smiled with the kind of anticipation I'd seen only on gladiators, right before they struck a killing blow. Was it possible I've made another mistake? He'd already surprised me several times today. But no, he couldn't best me in this. Done, I said, after a slight pause. His smile turned sly.
How shall we seal this new accord? A blood oath?
As if I'd assume his shedding a few drops of blood would suddenly make him honest. Something else. Hold out your hand. He arched a brow but extended a still soapy hand. I closed my fingers around his, not surprised that his flesh felt far warmer than a vampire's normal temperature. His time in the shower had heated his skin, and now that water would provide me with what I needed to ensure an oath he couldn't break. Water was one of the main natural elements of the world. That made it powerful, if one knew how to extract that power. I did, since I had a special talent with water. I hadn't wanted to use more of my hidden abilities today, but if I didn't, I'd soon be fighting off attacks from my duplicitous ally, in addition to the ones that would be coming from Dagon. A ripple of energy flashed through the room when I began to speak in an ancient language, the first one I'd learned. That energy settled on our joined hands. Ian hissed when he felt it.
What are you doing? And why are you speaking Sumerian?
I wasn't about to answer either of those questions. In truth, I hadn't expected him to recognize the long-dead language. Not that it mattered. These words weren't significant. Ian tried to pull his hand away. The spell I was creating trapped him. It wrapped around me, too, feeling inside us for the promises we'd both just made. When it found them, it tightened our hands together. Then I felt its energy crest before it slid beneath my skin to dissolve inside my bones. Once it did, I opened my eyes. Now neither of us has a choice about keeping our latest promise. The spell found them, and if one of us were to renege on them, it would rot our bones faster than either of us could heal. Chapter 4 Ian's eyes were lit up with emerald, and the muscle ticking in his jaw showed how displeased he was by this turn of events. But when he spoke, his voice was light, and instead of trying to pull his hand away, his fingers now caressed mine.
A law guardian who practices forbidden magic? How irresistibly hypocritical of you.
I wasn't about to tell him I'd learned this spell well before the Vampire Council had outlawed magic, or that more than a few law guardians were versed in at least mid-level magic. Otherwise, how were we supposed to go after rogue practitioners, when even an amateur would be able to take us down? Now we each have something on the other, I replied. His lips curled.
No one would believe me, and you know it.
True, but you know a bigger secret about me. Even if you weren't believed by the Vampire Council, it would still present problems if word of my stopping time reached the wrong ears. His smile only grew.
Subtlety doesn't suit you. Just tell me you'll kill me if I reveal your secret.
Fine, I'll kill you, and it will hurt, I said bluntly. He laughed and chucked me under the chin.
As I said before, that's the spirit.
Ian seemed as entertained by my threat to kill him as he'd been when he thought I was about to go down on him. He might be morally bankrupt, chronically dishonest, and inexplicably dangerous, but he was also fun. That, or my spirits, were lifted by the knowledge that, if all went as planned, Ian was going to bring many people. their long-awaited justice. Before I could get to that, there's one more thing we need to do before we leave, I said, taking Ian's silver knife and a small pouch from my back pocket. Ian eyed the pouch with more interest than the knife.
What's in that?
Salts. I put the stopper in the sink before I dumped the tricolored salts into it. Then I cut my wrist with the knife, willing my blood out from the wound. I had the amount I needed before the cut healed. Vampires might not have beating hearts, but we did control the flow of blood in our bodies. As my final ingredient, I laid the knife on top of the now bloody salt. Ian leaned against the shower wall.
Salt, blood, and silver. If you had ink and the proper tools, I'd think you were about to attempt a demon-repelling warding tattoo.
How do you know about those? I asked without looking up. The spell I'd cast meant I didn't need to keep a constant watch on him now.
I pissed Dagon off decades ago, yet he didn't find me until I summoned him this past month. Think my avoiding him was nothing more than luck.
Now I did glance up.
You warded yourself against Dagon using a locator spell to find you.
An auburn brow arched.
Him and every other demon that might try that. Demons can be loyal sods. If you wrong one of them, many of the rest are all too happy to deliver you up to the offended party.
I thought I was done being surprised by him. Wrong again. How do you know so much about demons? Vampires and demons are normally hostile toward each other, but only another demon could have taught you a warding symbol that powerful. Why would one? His grin was instant.
I'm that good.
No, I could just imagine. I could even see it for myself, if I wanted to look up one of the many sex videos he'd posted online. Thankfully, I had more important things to do. If that's the case, why didn't you ward yourself again after Dagon branded you?
Tried.
Ian's grin remained, despite his tone turning flat.
3 times. One moment the artist would be starting to ink the necessary wards over the brand. The next, I'd be covered in the artist's butchered remains, while Dagon danced around me. Didn't matter that I'd started each attempt inside a private residence. Also didn't matter that each time it had been daylight. The salt walls I'd built around myself also did nothing. Each time I suddenly found myself in a new place, covered in gore, with Dagon laughing his demonic arse off.
Against any other demon, his precautions would have been enough. Movies portrayed vampires as being unable to walk in the sun. That wasn't true. Vampires also didn't need to be invited in to enter a private residence. But those things were true for demons, and salt burned them like acid, so a salt wall should have been impenetrable to Dagon. Dagon's ability to stop time meant that he had a way around all that. Dagon probably felt the weakening in his tie to you after the first few lines of the warding tattoo, I said. It would only take him moments to use the link to teleport to your location, stop time around you and the tattooists, then retreat out of the sun. With all of you trapped, Dagon could summon a non-demon mercenary, send him inside the home to knock down the salt walls, bring you and the tattoo artists out, then have all of you brought to whatever dark, safe place he wanted.
Where he killed the artists and decorated me with their corpses.
Ian gave a pointed look at the ingredients in the sink before looking back at me.
Still want to attempt that tattoo?
He was warning me about the danger. How unexpectedly sweet. But I had no intention of giving Dagon enough time to find Ian. I have a way around that, I said, then spoke a single word in Sumerian. The knife melted into a silvery puddle over the salt. Both Ian's brows went up.
If you can do that, why didn't you melt that knife when I had it in your heart?
I let out a soft scoff. And get silver poisoning from it getting into my bloodstream?
That's better than instant death if I'd have twisted it.
I left that alone. Hold very still, I said, closing my eyes. This will sting. 3 softly spoken words later, the melted silver, blood, salt, and magic had all fused together. 8 words after that, and I didn't need to open my eyes to know that the entire mixture was now floating in the air. 13 more words, and Ian let out a shout that hurt my eardrums as that magic-infused mixture slammed into his groin, instantly covering the smoky dark patterns of Dagon's brand. When I opened my eyes, Ian was staring at his groin with disbelief. Dagon's brands were now covered with an intricate pattern of red, black, and silver. Those colors slowly faded as the silver, blood, and salt settled in past the skin level. Within moments, the smoky brands faded until there was no visible proof of the claim that Dagon still held on Ian's soul. Ian looked around the bathroom as if expecting Dagon to suddenly appear. I was braced too, but I'd cut the locator aspect of his tie in those brands too quickly. By the time Dagon would have felt it being altered, his connection to Ian would be gone. Without that, he had no way to find Ian, unless he'd already known where he was. But why would he? Ian had been moving around a lot, and Dagon had no reason to keep tabs on him. Not when Ian had been marked with the demon's own version of a supernatural GPS. Still, a few tense minutes passed in silence. When those minutes continued to trickle by without a sudden blast of power indicating that Dagon had arrived, Ian finally met my gaze. Before his features slid back into their usual devil-may-care expression, I caught something new that pierced me. Hope. A long time ago, someone else had given me hope, after I'd thought myself incapable of feeling it. That's why I knew how precious it was. It was also why I devoted my life to being a law guardian. I wanted to bring that same hope to all who suffered when the powerful took advantage of the vulnerable. Sometimes, however, the law wasn't enough. Dagon was a demon, so our laws didn't apply to him. That wasn't going to stop me. Dagon thought he'd gotten away with wrecking my life and countless other people's lives long ago. He hadn't. He'd just delayed his reckoning. Bringing Dagon to the justice he so richly deserved could cost me my position and my life, but those were prices I was willing to pay. Too much blood had been unavenged for too long, mine included. That's why I couldn't allow myself to feel anything for Ian, even if I could relate to him on this. He'd only use my feelings against me. It had certainly happened before. Ian wasn't just fighting for his life. He was also fighting for his soul. Our goals might be aligned now, but the moment they weren't, Ian would turn on me, and the spell I'd cast would only protect me up to a point. After that, we'd probably fight to the death, and I had no intention of letting that death be mine. Right now, we weren't in a death match, so I smiled at him. As I did, I realized it was my first genuine smile in a long time. See? Dagon can't find you any longer. Ian smiled back, emerald green lighting his turquoise gaze.
That means that somewhere out there, Dagon is going insane with rage.
Chapter 5. Dagon might not be able to track Ian through his now invisible brands, but I was still in a hurry to get out of here. Ian was right. Dagon would be beyond furious. While I relished the thought, I also recognized the danger. This bordello wasn't too far from where Ian had made his deal with Dagon in Minsk, Belarus. Dagon could do what I had done, start searching the more prominent whorehouses in Belarus until he found one that Ian had been to, then follow his trail from there. It had taken me 2 weeks because I'd had to drive from Minsk to Poland. Dagon could teleport, so his search might only take him a day. That's why I wanted to be away from here by nightfall. When I saw Dagon again, it would be on my terms, not his. Come, I told Ian. It was past time we left. He snorted.
Keep speaking to me as if I'm a dog, and I'll either hump your leg or bite you.
I suppressed my urge to tell him exactly what I'd do if he tried either. In all fairness, I had been acting high-handed. If we were going to work together, I needed to treat him with the same respect I was demanding for myself. I'm sorry, I said, stumbling over the word. When was the last time I'd apologized? I couldn't remember, so obviously it had been too long. It's a habit. The only times I deal with vampires like you are when I arrest them or judge them. Law guardians have to be unbending in those moments, or it implies the law itself is vulnerable, which can't happen.
Of course not,
Ian agreed, though his eye roll showed how little he cared about the law. Then he gave me a surprisingly serious look.
You've probably had to be twice as hard because you're a woman. Can't let the council claim your gender makes you too soft for the job, can you?
How right he was. Sexism was alive and well in vampire society. I was older and more qualified than most of the council members, but my decisions were still challenged with far more regularity than similar ones made by male guardians. Equally irritating was how perpetrators always attempted to run or fight when they saw me, yet many surrendered when confronted with weaker, younger male guardians. I cleared my throat and attempted a more conciliatory tone. Now that you've reminded me of my manners, you do agree that we're not safe here, and we have to leave, right? He gave me a quick grin.
You're the one blocking the door, little guardian.
20 minutes later, we were on the road. We would have left sooner, except we had to mesmerize all the prostitutes into forgetting that either of us had been there. Dagon had a lot of abilities, but he couldn't break through vampirically altered memories. Now this bordello was one less trail the demon could follow. Ian had been quiet during our car ride to Warsaw, occupying himself with his mobile phone. I welcomed the silence. It gave me time to muse over the unexpected parts of today. Ian would be harder to manage than I'd anticipated. While that required adjustments, it shouldn't require a new plan. His desire for self-preservation was strong, and that's what I'd been counting on. With that foundation in place, I could work around the other issues.
What the bloody hell are we doing at an airport?
Ian's sharp question cut through my musings. I pulled into the parking lot, which was more than half empty. This was a private airfield, so we didn't have any of the inconveniences common with a bustling commercial airport.
Flying?
I replied, which should have been obvious. I chartered a plane days ago in anticipation of finding you.
You chartered a plane?
He repeated.
Tell me you're joking.
What was his problem?
You're not afraid to fly, are you? It's boats I'm afraid of, but that's off topic. What's on topic is the fact that you chartered a plane with what I'll assume is a reputable company out of an easily found private airport in a major city of the country I was last seen in. Why don't you draw Dagon a map of where we're going, too?
I tempered my tone so I didn't snarl at him. I'm using false names. Dagon won't know it's us. Ian's face showed all the aggravation I was smothering.
You might do a bang-up job of upholding the law, but you clearly have a lot to learn about being on the run. You don't use regular airports or charter companies because aliases aren't enough. Dagon might not have pictures of you, but he does of me. One glance will confirm I'm the John Doe on your flight manifest. You also can't mesmerize everyone into forgetting we were here. There are too many people. Plus, there are security cameras.
I was still rankled by his tone, but he had valid points. It would be foolish to ignore them. You suggest driving?
No, that's too slow, and it won't get us far enough away.
Then what? This time, I didn't tamp down my irritation. I don't own a private plane, and unless your dossier lacks another important detail, neither do you. He gave me a jaded look.
I'm sure my dossier lacks quite a bit, but as it happens, I know someone with his own plane, and he's not far from here.
Wouldn't one of your friend's planes coming here also be an obvious trail that Dagon could follow?
It would, except this vampire is not my friend,
Ian said, and started dialing. I saw the country code before Ian tipped his mobile, and the rest of the numbers moved out of view. 40. Romania. Contrary to popular belief, Romania wasn't a hotspot for vampires because it was home to one of the world's most powerful. If that's who Ian was calling, he was correct. No one would believe this particular vampire would come to Ian's aid.
Ian,
I heard an accented voice say on the line. With that single word, my suspicions were confirmed.
I'm surprised to hear from you,
Vlad the Impaler continued.
Believe me, Tepesh, I'd rather shag myself with a sandpaper dildo than speak to you.
My eyes bulged. Ian saw us and waved, as if unconcerned that he'd insulted someone who'd been feared for his mass slaughters even before he became a vampire.
But I have to travel under the radar in a hurry,
Ian went on.
I need to borrow your plane. Should only take a few days. How fast can you get it to Poland?
Silence on the other line. I tensed, half expecting Ian's mobile to burst into flames. When Vlad got angry, things usually ended up on fire. Ian should be glad that he was nowhere near Vlad, who was only called by his other, more famous name of Dracula, by those who wished to die.
Where in Poland?
Vlad finally replied. Each word sounded bitten off from anger, but I was shocked that he appeared to be agreeing. I'd expected Vlad to tell Ian exactly how he was going to kill him.
Look for the remains of a large movie theater complex inside of Quomino. Should be enough space in front of it for the plane to land and take off. Quomino's mostly abandoned, but still, come after dark so there's less chance of a bystander taking video showing the call numbers on the plane. I'll have them painted over.
Vlad's tone remained sharp.
The plane will be there by midnight.
Then he hung up. Ian began to whistle as he ripped the memory card out of his mobile. Then he got out of the car, dropped the memory card and his mobile on the ground, and stomped on them. When he lifted his foot, only crushed pieces remained. I got out too, and went around to his side of the vehicle. How did you do that? I asked in disbelief. He glanced down.
Boot plus force?
Not that. I dismissed his shattered mobile with a swipe of my hand. How did you get Vlad Dracul to do your bidding?
Bidding?
Ian gave me a knowing smile.
Most times you sound exactly like a modern woman, yet every once in a while you slip and prove there's nothing modern about you.
You're avoiding my question, I said, although he was right about the slip.
Vlad owes me,
Ian replied in a tone that was now darker than obsidian. Once again, I felt icy tingles race up my spine. Who was the real Ian? The carefree rogue who amused me, despite myself? Or the dangerous man who set off all my inner alarm bells? Why would Vlad the Impaler owe you? He gave me a slanted look.
Thought you'd know, since you turned up with information that only Dagon, Vlad, and Vlad's wife knew about.
Layla had indeed been the one to tell me that Dagon had tricked Ian into bartering his soul to the demon. That's why I'd searched for Ian as soon as I'd finished my other business. I hadn't cared enough to ask Layla how Dagon had tricked Ian. All I'd cared about was finding a vampire that Dagon had branded so I could use him to draw the demon out. Now I wished I'd gotten the entire tale. Judging from Ian's shattered expression, I wouldn't be hearing it from him. Ian took my silence as proof of my ignorance and shrugged.
Doesn't matter. What matters is that while Vlad and I detest each other, and that's describing my feelings for him in the mildest possible way, he doesn't shirk from paying a debt. Now we have a way out of here that can't be traced. Excuse me.
We both turned. A young man with the name of the aviation facility emblazoned on his shirt had come out of the building and was walking toward us.
May I assist you with something?
The man continued. We'd been arguing in the facility's parking lot long enough to attract notice. Whether this young man was security or merely an attentive concierge, it was still time to go. Ian gave him a brilliant smile.
That your mobile?
He asked, nodding at the square-shaped bulge in the man's pocket. The man's demeanor changed from polite to wary.
Why? Give it to me,
Ian said, an emerald glow spilling out of his eyes. The man handed over his mobile, helpless to do otherwise under the power in Ian's gaze. Ian took the phone and held it in his teeth while he used both hands to pull down his pants. He wasn't wearing anything beneath them, and my brows went up.
What are you doing?
Ian only winked at me. Then, pants around his ankles, he took the mobile from his teeth, held it behind him with one hand, and took a selfie of his bare ass. Is this juvenile behavior necessary? I asked stiffly.
Absolutely,